Friday. And that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week. All in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true Sell or Diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die.
To me, the most major thing of playing golf, playing business golf, is you reveal who you really are as a person and what it's going to be like to do business with you by the way you play golf. So the guy's making a value judgment. Do I like this person enough to do business with them? Do I trust this person enough to do business with them? And this is my impact statement that I've made when I talk about golf. The person you're playing with or the people you're playing with will never remember the score of the round unless they had a hole in one or they had the best round they've ever shot.
Right.
But they will always remember that you cheated on the third hole.
No question. You used a foot wedge out of the woods. You improved your line of fairway.
Anything. Whether you put me down for a 7, but you know you had a 9. That kind of thing.
Right.
So it just tells me that the person is looking to cut something, take a shortcut, not play by the rules. And that's how they're going to do business with me.
There are so many
metaphors.
They're going
to substitute something. They're going to call up and say, they're going to lie to me about how it was delayed. Whatever the deal is, it is impactful to a point of, I'm not going to return your call.
There's a couple of different things at work there. One, you're talking about spending 4 to 5 hours with somebody, which is an incredible length of time. Now, that can be awkward for some people if you're just getting to know somebody, but think about how much time you spend with someone and how much you can learn in that time. The other
especially
thing is,
if you don't like them.
Oh, right. The other thing is,
or worse, if they don't like you.
But golf itself is trumped and marketed as a game of integrity. So now all of a sudden you've got a high bar. You learn a lot more about someone playing golf with them than you do playing poker or something else where you're actually
without a doubt. However, the challenge that you want to find out right away is, has this person ever played as a member of a country club or not? Because that tells you everything about that person's understanding of the rules of golf, the etiquette of golf, you know, I think that I've given you this before. You know, when I gave my talk about golf, there's a couple hundred people in the room. And I said, how many of you grew up in a country club?
Right.
I raised my hand and two other people out of 200.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's why you change your shoes in the parking lot.
Right.
You don't change your shoes in the parking lot. You go in the clubhouse because it's civilized.
That's right.
It's civilized. It's not like you're playing a pickup game of basketball or you're playing softball. In the C League, you're playing golf, and golf has a century of tradition about how it's played, where it's played, what the rules are, raking the trap, not walking up the trap, letting people play through, shouting four. You know, there's stuff that you do that's normal in golf that if you didn't grow up in a country club, you might not know the rules.
Right. It's stuff like the reason that you wear a collared shirt.
Right.
If you're a man,
exactly.
you remove your hat when you walk into the clubhouse.
Right.
You wear a certain
golf suit, not sneakers.
Right. Right. And I mean, there's some of that stuff comes off as stuffy, and sometimes it can be taken too far. There's no question about that. But when you think about it, it demonstrates a level of respect and a level of just, I've been there before, that I think makes a really, really good impression in front of somebody. When you know when to let someone play through, when you know when it's your turn, when you know when to stop looking for your ball or whatever.
Who has honors is a big thing in golf.
It is. It is. And when you have the wherewithal to maybe at the first tee say, okay, look, we're playing ready golf, right? I mean, do we have 6 hours to do this? Look, if I'm ready, I'm going to hit my ball while you're looking for yours so that when we find yours, you can just play and we can move up. I mean, there are a lot of changes to the etiquette and the rules that have made it a little bit more modern while still keeping an eye toward respecting the tradition from where they came from. And that's what I think is so cool about it.
And when you're playing in a foursome, do you play best ball?
Very rarely.
In other words, everyone's playing for this for their own score?
Yeah, typically. We switch it up with some events. I put together a couple of trips every year, and we're going to play some alternate shot and some different games this year just to speed things up and make it a little more fun. And you know what? I mean, the fourth round of the weekend, you know, in
yeah, you're pooped.
You wake up. It's the last round of the day. It's one of the shorter, easier courses. We're going to go out and we're going to, you know, have some fun. We're going to do things a little differently, shake it up. And you can do that.
Yes, the practice tees are popular, often in use and always with fans watching. And also popular is the huge putting green out near the first tee. This is where the pros get the last chance for practice before being called to the first tee.
There are so many metaphors and so many comparisons between the game of golf and sales or business of any kind. You know, I was on the putting green the other day.
However, in sales, you don't get mulligans.
No. You know what they call a mulligan in Scotland?
What?
Hitting three.
It's time for our special guest, Glenn Mattson.
Ding, 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 ding.
What do you think of the qualities of that great sales guy, that great sales manager guy? What makes that guy a better manager, leader than others?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's a lot of things. But, you know, I think your managers have a capacity from a communication standpoint that they're effective. They definitely hold people accountable to what needs to be done. You can go into issues around time and manage their time. They have the ability to be masters at, you know, of course, with communication is debriefing and pre-briefing and, you know, plans and dealing with confrontation and those type of things. But I also think a great manager is someone who, when we take a look at the law of attraction, the ability to get to truth relatively quickly, driving production and driving tasks through other people. So I would say there's probably 10 or 15 things that make managers pretty invaluable. Right. Some of them are pretty hardcore skills and tactics, and other ones are more mindset.
So let's talk about some of these talented salespeople. Why would you say they fail at sales?
It depends on if I said sales as a general or specific types of sales. I think you have some that are going to be more on the hunting side. You have some more on service side. You have some that are account managers that consider themselves sales. But if I look at a very traditional salesperson who has to prospect, he has to source it, he has to build relationships, qualify it, sell it, and then grow the account. If I look at that type of person, right, kind of standalone, if you turn around and say what makes them probably fail more so than anything else is lack of prospecting, lack of qualifying, because quite honestly, they're too much of a wimp to ask the right questions.
And how does a manager or leader help them overcome that stuff?
Well, you know, and there's the magic dust. The first is quite honestly, most managers don't even know what the problems are, right? So they'll turn around and say, my individual is not getting enough referrals, or they need to work on how to control the desk more, meaning that, you know, I want all the business coming from that individual through us. So they may have these objectives. So unfortunately, most managers look at an objective and say, okay, what do they need to be aware of? What's the knowledge they need to do? How do we make sure they apply it consistently so we can have a skill set? So if I come to Jeff and say, Jeff, I'm having a concern with, or you find out that I'm not asking for enough referrals, what most managers do, unfortunately, is go right to learning. This is what you need to do. This is how you need to do it. Mm-hmm. And instead of being a coaching program, you just now turn that into a one-on-one training program.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, so what they really need to do is, unfortunately, is be aware of why they're choosing not to do it. Is it lack of motivation? Is it lack of desire? Is it fears or bravery issues? Most managers have never been taught to investigate that stuff. What they have been taught how to do is train. What they have been taught how to do is demonstrate it, right? But not uncover the real issue. And on the flip side, if you have a really good manager, they don't have the problems. So because they don't have it, they don't understand that others have it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you go talk to someone who is, you know, Jennifer and I are having a conversation, Jeff, and you're my senior. Jen and I are talking, and it's a $50,000 solution. Well, 50 grand to me, because I'm your junior, I want to lose body fluids, right? I mean, it just panics the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
50,000 for you is like, if I'm on the phone for more than 4 minutes, I'm going to get irritated.
Mm-hmm.
So the perception of the size of the deal has a massive amount on what's going on inside my head also.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things I have found, managers are not the best at, you know, investigating.
Well, obviously that manager has not instilled in the head of the salesperson a deep enough belief system to where they feel like $50,000 is something that's not that big of a deal that they should expect. That if they believe deeply enough, they can transfer that $50,000 worth of value to the other guy, even though it may be more money than they personally can afford.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? So today's topic,
yes,
is what is your number? We're going to talk about numbers in sales because a lot of people will tell you it's all about the numbers. I will tell you it's all about the value behind the numbers, but the numbers can be the measurement device. So for example, if you need to make 5 sales a month, and it takes you 20 phone calls to set one appointment, and it takes you 4 appointments to make 1 sale, your numbers are obvious. I mean, they're totally obvious, and all you have to do is review them to find out and work backwards from them. How many appointments did I have? How long did it take me to get them? What did I do when I got there?
Put a 1 in the comments right now if you know your numbers. If you are 100% certain how many calls you need to make, how many sales you need to make, how many visits you need to make to get those, put a 1 in the comments right now.
And if you tell me that you can make 1 appointment for every cold call, for every 20 cold calls you make, you're a fucking liar. In a nice kind of positive kind of way. But why don't you tell me, for example, how many appointments can you make with 100 cold calls? And then that's a number. And then how many appointments can you make if you have 2 referrals? That's a number. And so you might want to look at all of the possibilities. So, and you're going to be your own judgment of your own information. It's an incredible thing to me how many people ignore their numbers, don't understand their numbers. And it's so easy to do. It's not difficult at all. But if you don't know it, you're never going to be able to deal with it in the right way.
And if you're new to selling, it's the kind of thing that you just need to start doing right away. So just go out there and treat it like an experiment. You're the scientist, the sales scientist, and treat it like an experiment and figure out how many calls you need to make, how many meetings you need to set, how much time you need to prepare for that sales meeting. I mean, you need to know all of those numbers, but you can't just whip them out of thin air. You literally need to, it's trial and error. You need to try it out, figure it out, and then you can finesse your numbers. So like what we try to do always when we're working with clients is, you know, the first thing is figuring out the number and then always refining it so that they can keep improving that number. So let's say it takes you 100 cold calls to get, you know, an appointment. Well, can you
Can you reduce it to 99?
No, but can you reduce it to 50?
Yeah.
Okay, well, can you be twice as effective? What can you do? And it's a matter of playing with your pitch, tweaking one word, tweaking a couple words here or there, and figuring out what really resonates with your prospects.
If you know me, you know that I'm a time allocation person, not a time management person. And one of the best examples that I can give you is in preparation. Hmm. I'm going to do outbound. Jen's going to do outbound. How many hours are you going to spend preparing for that?
So I have a 90-minute talk.
Yeah.
An hour and a half. I'll probably spend 30 to 40 hours preparing.
So I did my, I have a 1 hour talk. I'm going to do, I know I've spent 10 hours on it.
But also you've been doing this for
a long time,
longer time than I have.
So I'm going to spend 10 hours doing my 1 hour talk, and then I have a 90-minute talk, and I'm going to spend about the same amount of time doing that. It's going to take me 10 hours to prepare for a real, for a 1 hour, 1 hour and a half talk. So I know what time I have to allocate to be able to make that amazing. You have exactly the same process. You're going to make a sales call on two people tomorrow. How much time do you have to allocate to get ready to prepare for the customer in terms of them? That's a number. And you need to know that number like you know your name, because if you prepare less, the odds are you will not make the sale.
And so one of the things I'm doing to prepare that I think can help you prepare on your sales meetings is I am, once my slides are finished, I actually record it and listen to it. So I'm now becoming part of my own audience to figure out what that sounds like. Did I like it? What should I change? Was it in the right time frame? Did I go over? You can't go over. That's like the worst thing ever when
and
they're on
outbound,
a schedule.
They cut your mic off, by the way.
So am I within the time frame? Does it all fit? Could I tweak things here or there?
Yeah.
And then I'll tweak it. And then I'll record myself doing it again. And then I'll get my team involved to listen to what I'm saying so that I can get their feedback. And so it's an iterative process, but it's the same process you can take when you're prepping for your sales meetings. You know, I think that a lot of times when you get the meeting, you're so excited that you actually got the meeting.
Yeah.
You figure your job is done, but your job is only halfway there. You've gotten the meeting. Now comes the prep. And that is so huge. You know, no one teaches you in sales school, which there really aren't that many, but no one teaches you, like, once you get it, you really should be prepping, I don't know, 5 to 10 times the amount of the actual talk.
This has been a Seller Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GittimerLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.